Hey guys, welcome to the world of Asha Pearl. It's my world and I'm so happy you're here. Now I know it's been a while since I did a read of my books, but you know, I was taking a hiatus from, you know, just doing my podcast and just doing some reconstructing. But anyway, I'm back. And if you have been following this podcast, I will continue to do a read of Chalice of the Book of Life, and we are now on chapter 4. So chapter 4 starts off with Psalms chapter 42 verse 11, which reads, "Why am I so sad? Why am I so troubled? I will put my hope in God, and once again I will promise him my Savior and my God." And now we begin our story. After class, Zora was casually talking to her friend. Suddenly she spots Anton. Her blood begins to race and her heart begins to flutter over the sight of him. He casually takes a drink in front of the water fountain. As she watches her ex-boyfriend from a distance, she wishes she can turn the hands of time when they were still together. "Baby, come back to me," she thinks to herself. "I know you love me as much as I love you." "Hey, Zizi, is that your boyfriend?" the friend asks. "Ex-boyfriend. We're no longer together." "Too bad. Anton is a cutie." Zora cannot believe her ears, and she is becoming a little jealous. She feels she has to burst this bubble quickly. "I hate to break it to you, sweetie, but he's getting married to another girl," Zora says. "Wow. He didn't waste any time. Although it's too bad." "What? Do you want him?" "No. I would have thought the two of you would have got married. Zora isn't a little flattered by that comment. "Really? Why would you say that?" Zora asks. "I don't know. I guess whenever I saw you and Anton together, the two of you looked like you were made for each other." "Yeah, we did have strong chemistry." "Are the two of you still friends, at least?" "Yeah, of course." "That will never change," Zora lies. "Friends. I never thought I would dislike that word," Zora thinks to herself. Zora almost becomes misty-eyed because she and Anton are no longer together. Worst of all, she's carrying his child. Zora desperately wants to tell him about their baby, but the what if scares her. She is so conflicted. "Anyway, I have to run. I'll see you later. Take care of yourself, okay?" says the friend. "Okay, bye." When her friend walks away, Zora turns her attention to her ex-boyfriend, Anton Braganza. He is talking to a nun across the hall. She stares at the young man for a time, reminiscing the times they shared. Anton happens to catch Zora watching him from a distance. She abruptly turns away from him and starts to walk in the opposite direction. "I hope he didn't catch me staring at him," Zora thinks to herself, hastily walking down the hall. Then she hears someone call her name. Zora recognizes the voice. She stops abruptly and turns to see it was Anton. She becomes so excited, her heart begins to pick up speed. "Hi, Zora."
"Hi, Tony. How are you?"
"I'm okay."
There's a dead silence between them.
"I saw you staring at me."
"Was I?"
"Yeah, I think. Do you need something from me? Do you want to tell me something?"
This is Zora's moment of truth.
I wasn't looking at you, she lies. I must have been staring into space.
And you know what happened to be in my, and you happen to be in my space.
Oh, okay, well, I want to let you know again that I am genuinely sorry for the breakup. Please try to understand that this was something I had to, that had to be done. I hope we can still be friends.
These words are breaking her heart all over again.
Hiding her pain, Zora says,
sure, Tony. We'll always be friends.
There's another awkward pause.
I have to go, Zora says, breaking the awkward silence. I'll see you later.
Yeah, sure. Bye.
Anton watches Zora walk away with sadness in his heart, but it is nothing compared to the sorrow Zora felt in her heart. The sadness accompanies regret, the regret of not telling Anton that they will be bound together for the rest of their lives.
I am so stupid, she thinks to herself. I should have told them about the baby.
Zora stops and turns around to see if Anton is still there. He's gone.
Damn, Zora says to herself. Then she continues her path.
Weeks later, after her husband's burial, Sabine continues to support her family with her catering career. She has to cater to a birthday party at the Funky Fox Lounge. She is now a single mother working twice as hard to provide for her triplets. Sabine feels she did not have time to mourn her late husband. Therefore, she throws herself into her work. She walks back and forth to her car, unloading the trays and platters to set up the spread for the buffet. While working, a young man walks up to her.
Excuse me, miss.
Sabine turns around and asks, can I help you?
Are you part of the catering crew?
I am the catering crew.
Oh, that's cool. Did you prepare all this yourself?
Yes, I did.
Smells good.
Thanks. Sabine does not pay the gentleman that much attention. She continues working on the spread for the party. However, he does not take offense to it. The young man continues to converse with Sabine while she sets up the table. As she makes her way to her car to get more of the food, he follows Sabine.
Oh, let me help you with that.
No, I'm perfectly fine, thank you.
The gentleman watches her walk into the establishment with more platters.
Yes, you are perfectly fine, he says to himself. Sabine continues to ignore the gentleman, who is intrigued by her. He stands to the side of the table, watching her lay out the spread of delectable goodies. She is so concise and detailed the layout of the food as if it is for royalty. From the corner of her eye, Sabine can see the mysterious gentleman watching her every move.
Okay, man, she turns towards the young man with frustration. What do you want from me?
Nothing. She goes back to working on her table. Without missing a beat, she says,
apparently you have been following me like a puppy for the past 20 minutes.
I'm impressed by your work and dedication to this shindig, which I'm throwing. She turns around and looks at him.
Oh, wow. I'm so sorry. I didn't know. Excuse my rudeness.
No need to apologize. I know what it's like to get wrapped up into your work.
But these days, it's the only thing that keeps me from staying out of bed all day. Plus, I'm the only parent my children have after losing their father.
My condolences.
It's been a while, but thanks anyway.
She walks back to the car to get the last of the items.
Now I'm more intrigued.
More intrigued? Not only you're beautiful and a good cook, but you're also strong, not to mention you're dedicated to your family and your career. Sabine is flattered by the compliment. However, she keeps focusing on putting her finishing touches on the table. "If I didn't know any better, I think you were flirting with me, Mr. Francis. Mr. Chauncey Francis." They shake hands. "Sabine," she introduces. "Excuse my rudeness, Miss Sabine."
"You're excused, Mr. Francis."
"I did not know my father was here," he says sarcastically.
"Oh, funny."
They both laugh. "Well, it was nice meeting you, Chauncey. Please call me Chance."
"Okay, Chance."
"It was nice meeting you. You're leaving so soon?"
"Yes, I'm the caterer, remember?"
"I know, but I like you." Sabine blushes again. "Please," he says.
"Don't beg."
"Okay, Miss Sabine. I would be honored if you would accompany me to my birthday party."
I'm sorry, but I have to decline. I don't have a gift."
"There's one gift."
"What's that?"
"Your number."
"Oh, I don't know. I just met you and I have responsibilities and come on. Give Chance a chance."
"Okay. I promise I won't be a pest." Sabine laughs. He asks one of the bartenders if he had a pen. Luckily, he does.
"I don't have any paper," Sabine asks.
"It's okay." He takes one of the napkins from the bar. "Here you go. It's not paper, but it's the next best thing," Chauncey says. Sabine shakes her head and writes down her number.
"Here it is. Happy birthday."
"Thank you, Miss Sabine."
"It's Sabine. You can drop the miss."
"Sorry." "It's a force of habit. I was born and raised in the South, so excuse my Southern hospitality is embedded in my DNA, Sabine." Just when he was about to leave, Chauncey tells her one last thing.
"Oh, by the way," he says to Sabine.
"Yes," Sabine replies. "It's not my birthday." "Hello?" answers Fabiola.
"Oh my goodness. Look who decides to answer her phone," Zora says.
"Ha ha, very funny. Hold on for a minute. I have Isaac on the other line."
"Okay."
Zora waits for a few minutes and Fabiola comes back on the line with her.
"Sorry about that," Fabiola apologized.
"It's okay. I hope I was not interrupting anything important."
"No, same old lovey-dovey stuff."
They both laugh.
"So how's life treating you these days?" Fabiola asks.
"Not so good," Zora says with disappointment.
"Qué pasa? Is it the baby?"
"It's part of it. I spoke to Tony at school the other day."
"Wow.
That must have been pretty awkward."
"Very.
Tony apologized for the breakup."
"Okay."
"Tony also says that I should try to understand that the breakup was something he had to do.
"What is that supposed to mean?"
"I don't know, but it hurt my heart. Tony still wants us to be friends." "This can mean one of two things. Either Tony was told to break up with you, or he realized that..."
"Realized what? Tell me."
"Well, people sometimes fall out of love. Maybe he felt that way... But don't take my word for it. I could be wrong."
"No, perhaps you're right," Zora concluded sadly.
That's the reason he's marrying another woman."
"Zizi, I know this sounds
a bit cliche, but there are plenty of fish in the sea. Plus, you're beautiful."
"I'm pretty now, but soon I'm going to be big as a house."
"Well, you will be a big, beautiful house." They both laughed again. Speaking of getting big, did I tell you Tony? Did you tell Tony that he's going to be a dad? There was no response. Zara, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
So, did you tell him?
No.
Why not? I guess I was scared. Nana, even though he is your ex-boyfriend, Anton is the father of that baby. He has to know the truth. Or someone else can tell him on my behalf.
Like who?
How about you?
Me?
Yeah, you. Are you bugging? Please don't do this for me. Zora, I know you know I love you like you are one of my sisters. Pero nena, I'm not doing your dirty work for you. No one can. Fab, it won't sound right coming from me. Zora, you slept with Anton, not me.
Fab, try to understand. I'm in a terrible situation. Not only I am unmarried and pregnant, but the father of my child is marrying someone else. I cannot drop this bomb without taking into consideration the results.
Who knows? You and Anton will probably get back together. And most of all, you do not have to leave Holy Chalice. That is upside. That is the upside. But Zora sees the downside. What if Tony does not want me back? What if he wants to be married to this other chick? At least he'll know that he's a father and you told him. Zora is feeling very conflicted. Sweetheart, it seems you really need to weigh your pros and cons of the situation, but don't wait them too long. I will tell him the truth eventually. Okay. Well, I have to get ready for my early class tomorrow. All right. Remember, Zora, tell him. I will. Okay. Good night. After the friends part on the phone, Zora ponders on her conversation she had with Fabiola. She thought back on the breakup via phone. What a coward. Zora thinks to herself, he didn't have the decency to tell me to my face. She then remembers the tears she shed and the heartbreak she felt that night. Even though Jabari was there to comfort her, the pain still lingers. To make matters worse, Zara is told that she's pregnant. She feels that not only she disappointed her mother, but she disappointed her father. Daddy, I'm so sorry, Zora says, rubbing her stomach with tears in her eyes. I know you had high expectations for me, but I let you down being unmarried and pregnant. Please don't hate me, Daddy. I need you. Zora's inner circle knows about the pregnancy and the paternity of her unborn child. Now they are urging her to tell Anton that he is the father of the child. Zora knows she has valid points. However, how can Fabiola empathize with Zora? Zora feels Fabiola can see the situation from her perspective. Anton broke her heart to marry another woman. Now she is pregnant with his baby. After drawing this conclusion, it makes her angry all over again. Therefore, she makes a decision not to tell him. Oh no, Anton Braganza, Zora ponders. You will never know the kind of hell you are putting me through. You will never know the kind of hell you're putting me through now, but you will know soon. You will never know about this child. He or she will be all mine. Another week of work and school has finally concluded. Valentine Newkirk picks up her children, Yvonne Lee and Archer, from school. When they finally reach home, the children rushes into the house. All right, Valentine announces. You know the drill. Change your clothes and start your homework.
Yes, Mommy, they say. Hey, Mommy, what are you going to make for our after-school snack? Archer asks anxiously.
You know, it's a surprise, Yvonne Lee intercepts. Why do you always ask silly questions?
My questions are not silly. Mind your business, Vonnie.
You're not the boss of me. That's enough, their mother interjects. Now go do as I say, and I'll let you know that your snack is ready.
Yes, Mommy, the children say.
Yvonne Lee and Archer go into their rooms, while Valentine prepares their after-school snack. While Yvonne Lee changes out of her school clothes, she cannot stop thinking about Nevin, whom she called Uncle Nevin. Yvonne Lee remembers the first time Nevin showed her to blow a bubble from her bubble gum. She remembers times when she, Archer, and the triplets went to the child's playground with Nevin. On one occasion, she had trouble playing one of the games in the playground, and she was feeling discouraged. Suddenly, Nevin came to her rescue by winning the game for her with a stuffed white unicorn with rainbow hair. Then she reminisces over hearing the conversation her parents had about him. She goes to her toy chest and pulls out her rainbow-haired stuffed unicorn. Yvonne Lee holds the toy close to her body, giving it a great big hug. "He's dead," she thinks to herself. "Is Uncle Nevin really dead?"
No.
No, he died, but he's probably in heaven to get better, and he'll be back.
Yeah, maybe that's what Mommy and Daddy mean about death.
Uncle Nevin is probably in a special hospital in heaven, and when he gets better, he'll come back to Earth, and we'll be happy again. So with that thought, Yvonne Lee feels a little hopeful about Nevin coming back home. She kisses her unicorn and places it on her bed. She then gathers her markers, crayons, and her book of colorful construction paper. She wants to make something special for her uncle for his homecoming. When she hears a knock on the door, Yvonne Lee is startled.
Yeah?
Yvonne Lee answers.
Our snack is ready, her little brother says.
All right, I'm coming. The children sat at the dinner table and had stuffed caramel apple slices and fruit juice. Valentine loves giving Yvonne Lee and Archer surprise after-school snacks. Doing little things such as this gives her a little joy, yet something is still troubling her. After snack time, Yvonne Lee and Archer go do their homework. When it is done, they place their homework on the dinner table to be checked by their mother, Valentine. Yvonne Lee immediately goes back into her room and starts on her special project. Papers, crayons, and markers, safety scissors, and glue sticks are scattered all over her bedroom floor. She cuts, colors, and glues with tenacity. Yvonne Lee is determined to make her surprise gift for Nevin the best gift he could ever receive. Then in the middle of her masterpiece, she and her brother are called for dinner. At dinner, Valentine engages in conversation with her children. To Valentine, it is refreshing to hear about her children's day in school. It is better than eating in silence and hearing only the sound of their eating utensils hitting their dinner plates. However, Valentine is sad because her husband, Christopher, is not there to have dinner with her and their children. She wishes her husband home with his family. She knows that it took a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, as well as their life savings, to put together their neighborhood bar. Valentine is proud of their accomplishments. But she feels her husband needs to balance work with his family. She misses her husband.
Mommy, are you okay? Archer asks his mother.
It's nothing, baby. Finish your dinner.
Yes, Mommy.
After dinner, Archer sits in the living room and watches television with his mother. Meanwhile, Yvonne Lee goes back into her room and continues to work diligently on her present for Nevin. She is hopeful that he will get better and come back to Earth to be with his friends and family. Suddenly, there's a knock on the door. "Come in," Yvonne Lee says. "Hey, Pumpkin," greets Christopher. "How was school?" "It was good," she replies, cutting a piece of construction paper. Christopher looks around his daughter's room. He's in awe over the mess of paper, markers, colored pencils, glue sticks, and safety scissors on the floor. "Why is there so much stuff on the floor?" "It's a mess," Christopher asks. "Daddy, I'm working on a special project." Is this a school project?" "No, it's for a special someone." "A special someone?" "Yes." "Who is it?" Yvonne Lee looks at her father and smiles. "Daddy," she starts, "I can't tell you. It's a surprise." "Okay, I'm sorry, sweetheart. Carry on with your special project. But do not stay up too late. It's a school night." "Okay, Daddy." When her father closes the door behind him, Yvonne Lee continues with her homemade gift. "I hope you can get better soon, Uncle Nevin," Yvonne Lee thought. "Everyone misses you, especially me. Can't wait to see you again." All right, well, that concludes chapter 4 of Chalice, the Book of Life. Tune into chapter 5. This is the world of Aja Pearl. It's my world, and I'm so happy you came. Bye-bye.